Flip, 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 flip. Flip Weekly!
Hey, what's going on? This is Matt from Flip Weekly. You're listening to the Flip Weekly podcast. This is a podcast all about going to thrift stores and garage sales, finding items to resell online for a profit. Now, this week has been huge. We went to garage sales, me and a buddy, and we didn't pick up a single thing, but the marketplace finds for this week and the thrift store finds for this week are insane. Man, if anyone was around in Sydney on Saturday and they went to garage sales, please tell me if you went to one particular sale. I'm going to tell you a bit about it and you'll be able to identify whether or not you went there, because there was like a bunch of old ladies and they were like, "Do you like antiques?" I'm like, "You know, I like a bit of everything." And I walk inside, me and my buddy, and we see this. The first thing I see is a rocking horse that has what appears to be real animal fur on it, an eye drooping down. And I'm thinking, what on earth have I gotten me and my friend into? The house smells. There's like cat food, dog food on the floor, on benches. We walk around a corner and there's an entire room stacked to the ceiling with clothes. And I'm thinking, we're not going to go through this. There's no way. I'm actually thinking, please don't touch anything. I don't want to touch anything here. We have people following us around because they said we should probably go inside. We should probably watch what they're doing. We're not touching absolutely anything in here. There was a lot of antiques, but they were sort of creepy antiques. They were too big to ship. Otherwise, I probably would have bought something really, really weird. I wish I took photos, but I was just getting creeped out. And I also felt like I had eyes on me. You know, I felt like eyes were piercing in the back of my fucking skull. This place was weird. And I'm just thinking, you know, my friend is never going to come to another garage sale with me if this is what it's going to be like. We just walk through a house of horrors, not buy anything, and we leave just meeting eyeline, like meeting each other's eyeline, and just we know that the other person's thinking, what in the fuck did we just see? There were so many weird things. It was like, picture a Goosebumps book, and it was like, you know, supposed to be a grandma's creepy old house. It was basically exactly that. Going inside, I felt so uncomfortable. There was the smell. There was indoor fireplaces with like sort of spooky looking ornaments. It was a very, very unusual garage sale. And I really wish that I had, you know, I really wish I was recording so that you guys could see what it looked like. But if that's the state of garage sales in 2025, then we're in for a really rough time. I said to my buddy that, you know, if we don't find anything, I have guaranteed profit lined up, because throughout the week I was scouring Facebook Marketplace. When I say scouring, I mean open it up out of habit on my phone and I just click on Marketplace and see what's there. I found something that was mislabeled. I knew it was going to sell for at least $150 and it was listed at $5. And I just said to my friend, you know, if we don't find anything here, we're going to go and pick up this marketplace item. We're going to list it up and we'll split the profits. It was only $5. And I was like, do you want to split it? $2.50 each. Said yes. So that was good preparation from me, because I just had a feeling garage sales weren't going to turn up with anything. And that's sort of the way it's been lately. I don't know about you, but I just haven't had much luck at garage sales. I think it might be because I'm a bit more picky now. I don't want to be picking up low quality items. I don't want to be filling up my place with junk or items that are going to sit around forever. I want to get those high value items. You know, you've been following Flip Weekly for a while. You know that most of the items I buy, I want to be able to sell them for at least $100. And in most cases at garage sales, you may not be able to find items like that. But yeah, Sydney garage sales lately have just been few and far between. And yeah, I just haven't had much luck. That doesn't mean that we're not doing really well, because you would see the title of this podcast. And I mean, we might as well just get straight into it, because this week I found a huge Facebook Marketplace bundle. It was listed there for $200. And it was, I think the title of the listing was simply Polly Pocket and Pollyville. It was listed up for, I think, maybe 20-25 minutes before I first messaged. And the description said, this is a large collection of Polly Pocket from 1980s. Polly Pocket, 4 separate compacts, a Pollyville mat, 9 buildings, 2 vans, 30 separate pieces, and a fucking partridge in a pear tree, right? For those unfamiliar with Polly Pocket, you must be either very young or very old. It was a, you know, a late 80s, early 90s toy. They've remade them now in 2025 with bigger pieces, I guess, because they're choking hazards. They're like little play sets that kids use. They have very small micro figures. Picture like a Lego minifigure, but even smaller than that. And the original Polly Pockets were designed so that, you know, you could have this little toy that can fit in your pocket, and it fits like a clamshell. You know, it closes like a clamshell, and you open it up, and inside of it could be a house, it could be like a beach, it could be anything like that. And, you know, the little minifigures that come with it, you know, you just play with them. And they were very popular back in my day. I know my sisters had them. I have home videos of my sisters opening presents and their Polly Pockets. I even have, you know, the dude version, which was the Mighty Max. The Mighty Max was what I received as a little kid as a present. And yeah, this is just very nostalgic for me and nostalgic for my entire family. I'll talk about that a bit later. But yeah, I found this Polly Pocket bundle on the weekend. And you know what? I'm going to have to devote an entire segment a bit later on how I'm able to find amazing marketplace deals, because I've just had so much luck with marketplace lately. Yes, it's luck. It's also just knowing what to do, knowing which days, what time to check. But yeah, I'm going to go into that a bit later because I have a lot to talk about with Facebook Marketplace. But yeah, this Polly Pocket bundle was $200. It was only about 20 minutes up the road. Oh, I probably shouldn't say that because I'm putting out a video about it later, and I say the location. I do not want you fucks to know where I live, somewhere in Sydney. And there's a whole bunch of these buildings and compacts. But what I was most excited about was the 30 separate pieces, which was described in the listing. And if you look at the photos, if you go on the Flip Weekly newsletter, you'll be able to see the photos of this listing. The minifigures were in a separate storage container, a tiny storage container. There was no way to know what was inside of it. I sent a message to the guy asking if he knew if any of the pieces were complete, and he said no. It was a very brief conversation that I had with him. I assume he was getting plenty of messages, but I just did the maths, man. I just did the maths. Four separate compacts, 9 buildings, 2 vans. That's 15 individual sets. There's 30 separate pieces, meaning the minifigures. I'm just thinking, you know, 15 sets, 30 pieces. Those 30 pieces look like they've been taken care of. I mean, this entire set looks like it's been taken care of. Therefore, we might be able to assume that those pieces belong to those sets. And if we can complete a set or two, I know that you're going to be able to sell them for a bit of money, and we'll be able to make our money back. In fact, there was one or two sets that if the sets were complete, we would be able to sell them for $200-$300. So it's a gamble. It is really a gamble, but it's a smart gamble. Because if those 30 separate pieces don't belong to this set, that would belong to another set, and you could sell those pieces. Either way, if you find the Polly Pockets, or if you find the Mighty Max, just the compacts, just the buildings in the wild, they're not worth as much money. Sometimes I even leave them behind, but you will be able to sell them either way, just as the buildings, just as the compacts. But yeah, if we're able to match the pieces to the sets, then we're in for a huge, huge payday. That's my thought process anyway. So I tell the guy, look, I'm interested. I ask if he'll take $150. It's a bit of a lowball, but I was like, I was hesitant, you know. I didn't really want to spend $200. Like, it's a lot of money. I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of work because I'm going to have to clean these up. I'm going to have to match the pieces. I'm going to have to do a bit of research into each individual set and even to the minifigures to work out which, like, what goes with what. And I know, boo-hoo, I have to do a bit of work to make some money. But I usually like the quick, easy flips. You know, I'm a lazy fuck, so I don't want to have to do any sort of work. But I'm thinking, let's do this. He wouldn't accept $150. I said, okay, fine, $200. And of course I said, is bank transfer okay, or would you prefer cash? And they're always like, cash, please. I'm like, of course. Have to go find some cash, like go to a 7-Eleven with no ATM and ask if you can do cash out. You say $200 and they're like, no, definitely not. Because no fucking shop carries cash anymore. It's so hard to get it out. But yeah, I drove out there and I recorded bits and pieces of it. I had a chat with a guy. I was like, you know, what's the story behind this set? You know, it's an insane collection and it's so old too. And he's like, they belong to my sister. She offered them to her kids, but they didn't want them. That's the same sort of story with the Mr. Squiggle plush, remember, from a couple of weeks back. She offered them to her grandkids and they were like, ew, no, this thing's fucking weird. But yeah, this person offered them, or someone they know offered them to kids, and they were like, no, you know, it doesn't flash or make any noise or jingle or become an addictive thing like most kids' toys now. So they declined, and the guy ended up putting them on Marketplace. And, you know, I asked him if he got many messages, and he said that he got so many. And he's like, yeah, I think I priced it too low. And I'm thinking, yeah, you probably did. If you, you know, piece them all out, you'd be able to make a bit more money. And, you know, even when I saw this listing, I was able to comp up one of the items because I could see vaguely what it was. And it was probably the most, not nostalgic, but the most remembered for me, Polly Pocket. It was a Fairy Light Wonderland. It's in the shape of a star. If you Google it, you'll be able to see what it is or go on the newsletter. But that compact alone, without any sort of accessories or toys, sells for $70 by itself, plus postage. So you'll be able to get, well, I knew I'd be able to get at least like 70, 80 bucks just for this compact. So I looked at what minifigures go with it, and I'm just thinking, like, please, let this one have some minifigures, because it can sell for like 150 bucks with the minifigure, like with just one minifigure, and that's not complete. So if I find two, I can get even more. So I knew a bit about it. So when he said, you know, I priced it too low, I'm thinking, yeah, he probably did. But of course I didn't offer him more money. But anyway, I got the entire set, and I'm looking at it and I'm just thinking, there is so much here. This is going to pay off. Without even taking it home yet, I like sat it down and I looked at it on the side of the road, and I just thought, this is going to pay off. There is a lot here. So I took it home and I spent the night, I spent a good maybe 2 hours piecing together what goes with what. So I took all of the playsets, I scanned them with Google Lens, found out what they were, and I looked on eBay for listings that said complete, and then I looked to see what made it complete. In most cases, it was like two figures or three figures. And then I looked through those 30 minifigures trying to match them up. And if they were matched up, I just put them in a plastic bag, and I did that for every single set. And what I realized is at the end, I was left with 15 play sets, and not a single one was without a figure. In fact, 5 of them were fully complete, and the others were almost there, maybe missing like a doll, or in the case of one of these, missing a fucking cookie baking tray. It's so annoying, because this would be worth a lot of money if it had a cookie baking tray, which is like a 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter cookie baking tray, for real. That's frustrating. So yeah, I did all that, and there were some of these sets that lit up. They still lit up. That Fairy Light Wonderland I was talking to you about, the star-shaped one, when you opened it up, it looks so fucking cool. There's multiple lights within it that turn on. When you shut it, they turn off. It's like a fridge door. How does it work? Nobody knows. But you open this thing up, lights come on, shut it down. And that is one of the things that people look out for with these Polly Pockets, is if the lights still work. So I had, with that Fairy Light Wonderland, the 2 original dolls, I had the working lights and the compact. This thing by itself is 150 bucks. So that's the very first one I did. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm at 150 bucks already. I paid 200 for the entire thing. What is this going to end up with? Because I still have like 14 sets to go, and I've parted them all out, and every single one has at least one doll. I'm thinking, this is a home run. So I create a spreadsheet, and I put down the title that I'm going to use on eBay for them. I've done all of the comp research. I went through each individual one. You know, if there was a set that I had that was complete and another one that sold complete, you know, like we do with comp research, price it up at that. If there's one that's missing a doll, we lower the price a bit. But, you know, if there's one with three dolls and there's one with one doll, but we have two, price them in the middle, or really just basic comp research. So I had 17 listings in total, actually 18, but I didn't list up the mat. It came with like this Polyville mat, which is where you put like the buildings and compacts and stuff. I didn't list that up originally. I completely forgot about it, but we had 17 listings of the buildings, the compacts. There is a lot of value here, a lot of value. The most expensive playset was one called the Light Up Bridal Salon. This thing, obviously, you push a button and it lights up. It came with three minifigures. You know, it's a bridal salon, and it also came with two dresses or two little skirts that you can put onto the minifigures. And that is a active listing, sold listing, comp price of $149.95. Second most expensive was the one I just talked about, the Fairylight Wonderland, $149.95. So we have two $150 listings, and they go all the way down to $50. But there is more above $100 than there's below $100. If you want to see all of the listings and their photos and their price tags, either go on the Flip Weekly newsletter or check out our social media, because I'll be posting a video about it. But it's all added up. I've added it up. If you think there's $500 of value, you're wrong. Incorrect. It's more. $1,000, it's more. $1,500, it's more. There is so much fucking value here. And I was being conservative with these estimates too. You know, I want these sold. I don't want to be at the tippy top waiting six fucking years for me to sell all these Polly Pockets. There's 30 minifigures that are like a centimeter tall. I will lose these fucking things. There is $1,619.15 worth of Polly Pockets. That is fucking insane. I got this shit for $200, and there's total $1,600 worth of value. I posted this set on a Polly Pocket Facebook group after waiting like 24 hours to join and pleading my case, having to talk about how important Polly Pocket has been in my life. And I got reactions from people that are like, oh my God, this is an amazing collection. An insane Facebook marketplace find. It really is. And look, I'll tell you, this is the first time that I've found a Polly Pocket to resell. It honestly is. I've never found one in the wild. I don't think. I can't really remember. I think I would have written about it if I did find one, but I can't remember finding one. So I don't know what the market's going to be like. It looks like it's bigger in the US than it is in Australia. That just makes sense. You know, it's a bigger market over there. I don't know how fast it's going to go because I was talking to my mom about it. And at the end of the day, these are plain plastic. You know, it's just plain. It's bits of plastic, right? It's plastic at the end of the day. And who can afford $150 worth of plastic in 2025 when everyone seems to be struggling? So I don't know how they're going to go. I have a feeling that they might be, you know, drip fed out. I mean, that's not the right term. Like, you know, drip, what's that? You know, that term where you do something over a long period of time and it's like drip fed. I have a feeling it's going to be that, but for sales. So yeah, I don't know. But either way, $1,600 worth of listings in one afternoon on one deal is insane. I know that I could have flipped this quickly if I just listed it back online and on Marketplace that afternoon for $400. I could have easily doubled my money. But when it comes to a set like this, it really is the most valuable way to make money by listing them individually. You know, you could list it as a big lot. I could put it as an auction. There's no guarantee I'll even get close to $1,000. So yeah, because who has $1,000 to spend on Polly Pocket? I've listed them individually, $1,600 total, and it's going to get us more money. And I'm definitely going to keep you updated with the results. And you might hear a bit later in what I've sold. Maybe I've sold some, maybe I haven't. You're just going to have to keep listening. But yeah, that was insane. And you guys are going to have to remind me to talk about Facebook Marketplace and what I've been doing to find these amazing deals, because I have more Facebook Marketplace deals that I'm going to talk about in the weeks to come. I'm going to stretch those out a bit, drip feed them, I guess, if you will. Yeah, I mean, we're all in different locations. I hope no one lives near me, but there's enough Facebook Marketplace to go around where we can just talk about the best strategies that seem to work. Yeah, I mean, if I can profit on this, you can profit on something too. We're all in different niches. So yeah, I'll be doing that. You just got to remind me, and hopefully I don't forget. Oh, that also reminds me, I got so many messages this week about the list that I put together last week. I mean, the interactive table. What did I fucking call it last week? The nostalgic 90s television shows. That thing that I put together that you can find on Flip Weekly, ranking the TV shows by most expensive to least expensive. So many messages from people saying that they're hoping to find something related to the Amanda Show in the thrift. I think this is going to be a huge influx of the Amanda Show on eBay and driving the price down. So looking forward to that. That list is, it's handy. It's handy for me. It's handy for a couple of years, but also a pain in the ass because it ruins some of these shows. I should be excited to see Cat Dog on a DVD shelf in a thrift store, but now I just associate it with low value. It makes me a bit sad. But anyway, those Polly Pockets, insane. Check out the video on socials or the photos on Flip Weekly. We're going to move on. And the next item was something that I didn't buy in Facebook Marketplace. I found it in a thrift store. And it's something that you would never be able to find usually in a thrift store. Or if you did, it would be incomplete or it'd be missing something. We've just been talking about minifigures and how hard they are to keep safe. The next item is Lego, but it's not Lego that you'll be familiar with. It's next to impossible to find it online. And I mean, speaking of next to impossible, it's impossible to find Lego in a thrift store that isn't priced on eBay active listings or, you know, missing the minifigures or even missing a piece. Lego is so easy for thrift store employees to price up because each Lego piece has that unique number that you can just type in. You just type in, you know, Lego 72561 and it instantly comes up with the price of it. So it's easy to comp up, and Lego sells so quickly that thrift stores, they don't have it. So it's not that, but it is Lego. I don't know if it fell through the cracks or there was nothing available online, so they didn't know what to do with it. But I saw this in the thrift store, and I immediately knew it was old just based on the fucking mum's haircut on the front of this. So it's called a board game with Lego bricks. That's literally what it's called. It has no other name in it. It has the Lego logo, the very, very old Lego logo. It has a picture of four people on the front sitting around a table playing this game. The mum has a mullet. The kids, they look old. I mean, they're young kids, but they look from a different era. And yeah, it literally just says a board game with Lego bricks. And the board game, it has the playmat. It has four different colored four square Lego pieces. You know, the Lego pieces that just have the four little dots on them. It has different colors of those. It has the instruction manual inside. The instructions say, the idea of the game is to capture the opponent's bricks and keep your own for as long as possible. The player who keeps his own bricks for the longest time wins the game. And it's copyrighted 1987 by Lego Group. So we have the manufacturing date. But honestly, the weird thing is, doing a search online for that title, there's nothing that shows up besides eBay listings. And those eBay listings are for around $180. I paid $5 for this. And you would think with such a huge collector's market, there would be something, anything on this game. But there's nothing, absolutely nothing. I thought it might be a knockoff, but the instruction manual and everything else looks completely legit. Maybe it was like a board game manufacturing company that licensed to Lego, and then maybe Lego hated it or they didn't like that they didn't develop it themselves, so they never mentioned it again. But there's absolutely nothing about it. And, you know, unlike other thrift stores when they sell Lego, the game was complete with all the individual pieces. So yeah, it had the, like I said, the instruction manual, the the bricks and it had a weird looking dice. So yeah, I don't know. If you want to check it out and tell me if you've ever seen this before, if you were born in 1987, maybe you played it before. I've never played it. I've never seen it before. So I'm not too sure what the go is with this Lego, with this Lego game. Even the name is just like absurd. A board game with Lego bricks. What a dumb name. It's a horrible name, a board game with Lego bricks. It's a Snakes on a Plane board game version. It's funny just thinking of board games if they didn't have a creative name and they just spelt out exactly what it was. Like Monopoly is just like board game with cash and dog pieces. I don't know. Yeah, really weird. $5 I paid. The other listings that were on, I think there was two or one. They were priced up. They were like $180. They all had watches. They all had views. So I figured, you know, I'll do this for $99.95. It's the average sale price that I want. So if I can turn $5 into $100 for this Lego piece, it's going to be, you know, a good sale. And I'm sure somebody would want this. It's a part of Lego history, even if it's a bootleg. It's really old, 1987. Like, how old does that make it? Like 38 years old, something like that. I don't know. Yeah, if anyone knows anything about this, I would love to know. I'm leaning more towards a knockoff than anything else. I looked up Lego because Lego, obviously, huge collector's market. So every single like Lego set, Lego board game has been documented and cataloged. This isn't mentioned on any of them. So maybe I should, you know, maybe I should like post it on a Lego group, try and get more information. I don't know. It's really baffling for such a huge company to not mention this game at all. I mean, if I created a board game with that name, I probably would never mention it before. It's like, what's your game called? Well, it's a board game with Lego bricks. Yeah, but what's it called? It's like that fucking scene in Dude, Where's My Car? So yeah, really, really weird. I think it's gonna sell. You know, Lego is one of the fastest selling categories, so I don't think there's any reason why this isn't going to sell. Moving on, in that exact same thrift store, I found something for myself just to give myself some more work. I found this Sydney Swans AFL baseball cap, fully signed. It had a bunch of player pins on it. I just thought, you know, I love identifying signatures. I don't know if I, you know what, I say that and I don't know if I even believe it. I don't know if I like identifying signatures. It's sort of like problem solving to me. It's put me in front of a jigsaw puzzle and I'll probably jump off the balcony, but give me a autograph that isn't easily identifiable straight away and I'll sit there for a good 20-30 minutes trying to work out who these people are. But in this thrift store, there was around 6 hats. They were all Sydney Swans AFL hats. 5 of them were very generic and this one was not. This one had the pins, had the badges stuck on them, and it also had 2005 premiers. So it was a 2005 premier hat. It was priced at $10. All the other generic looking ones were priced at $6, all of them fully signed. In this situation, you can either buy them all or you can just buy the one that you think is worth the most money. And that's what I did. I bought the one that I thought was worth the most money. And I'm going to tell you why I bought just the 2005 premier hat. Yes, it's more expensive. I mean, $4 more expensive, but it's tied to a specific date and that can give it value. And it also helps with creating a story when it comes to the marketing and also helps with identifying the signatures because it points to a specific year, 2005. We're going to be able to use that information to identify the signatures. Plus the pins on the front of it made it look, you know, pretty cool and like a display piece that I'm sure somebody's going to buy. We buy that. There's no active listings or sold listings for a 2005 Premier's hat. So we get to make up the price. We just have to identify the signatures. So we take it home and I'm going to tell you my strategy. Okay. This is what I do for identifying the signatures. First of all, we need to get organized. So we work out exactly how many signatures are on the item. In this case, there was 5. So we label them on, you know, with notepad or a piece of paper, 1 to 5. And we either go from like left to right, top to bottom, just work out whatever, you know, whatever way you want to go first. So then we bring up the team sheet for the 2005 Sydney Swans. We know it's from the 2005 season, so we're able to use Google and we can find the list of all the players from that time. Now, with many sports teams and many players that, you know, sign items, they write down their player number. So they'll write, you know, Matthew Carpenter, number 1. And we're able to use that player number to our advantage when trying to identify the signatures. You know, if you can't identify the name, you might be able to find the number. It just makes it easier to identify the player. And, you know, you search the internet for their autograph, match it all up, and that works. Now, if you get stuck on these signatures, look for marks in the signature that are usually present despite how bad the signature looks. So, for example, if the player has an I in their name, you'll usually be able to spot the dot mark, because in most signatures, you would do the dot. So from there, you're able to eliminate players without an I in their name and just narrow it down. You can also do that with L's. If there's 2 L's, that's very common for like last names or even first names, you'll be able to see the L's. Just look for patterns like that. Now, if you don't have any luck with that, go through the players one by one and search Google Images for the player name plus autograph and just compare side by side those signatures. Now, that might seem like a lot of work. It really isn't though, because in most cases, you're going to be able to find at least 1, 2, 3. And you know, if all else fails, the internet is your friend. Go to Facebook groups, go to the specific sports team, and they can help you. They might not, because they don't, in some cases, they don't like helping people because they know they're going to just list it up on eBay. But just submit a post with a couple of clear photos and ask if anyone can identify the signatures. And if not, you can always list the item up with only a few of the identified signatures. And the mystery, who knows, might even lead to like a quicker sale. But yeah, at the end of the day, you're really wanting to be able to tell a story with the title and with the description. So that's the primary reason why I left the others behind, because who knows where they were from? There's no year on them. So if they're from, you know, 2020, 2015, 2010, it's really hard to create a story with that. And, you know, I've done this before where I found an item that had a signature and I was like, okay, I identified one of them. And it's like, can we narrow this down to a year? And it's like, oh, well, this player played for 15 years with this team. So it doesn't help. It just creates a harder workflow. So I was able to create a story with this hat. I said, it's a 2005 Premier's hat. It's signed by the team who brought the Sydney Swans their first premiership since 1933. So with the story created, I was able to list the hat up for what was it, $100 on eBay, and I was expecting a quick sale, to be honest. Now, going back to those garage sales that I was talking to you about earlier, I went with my buddy. I had a plan for when we failed. I shouldn't say when we failed. I had a plan for if we failed. Throughout the week, I found something on Marketplace that was poorly listed. I mean, poorly labeled. I knew it was going to be guaranteed profit because I've sold one of these before. If you go on the Flip Weekly newsletter, you'll be able to see what this item was. But the Marketplace listing said fish toy and fishing rod. Now, the fishing rod, I don't care about. I might have left it something expensive behind, but the fish toy is what I was excited about. It was $5. And I just knew from past experience that this is going to sell quickly and sell for a lot of money. It was a Big Mouth Billy Bass from 1998. Now, those are the fish that you see hung up on bar walls and they sing. You know, they sing Take Me to the River. They sing Don't Worry, Be Happy. They flap their tail. They move their mouth. And in some cases, they turn and look towards you. Now, this was in the box. It still had its original plastic on it. The little brass plate still had the peel-off stuff. These things, within Australia, they go absolutely crazy. You know, I checked out sold comps because I haven't sold one in a while just to see what the market's like. And the last sold one for this was $150 plus postage. And the one before that, on auction, $102 with 31 bids. So these Big Mouth Billy Basses continue to be worth picking up. And you just have to remember, when you get these, you want to make sure they work. You want to make sure the sound is still working, the tail is flapping, the mouth is opening and closing. But just know that not all of them turn towards the camera or turn towards you. It's very common for these things, you know, they're really fucking old, to not be able to do that anymore. All of these sold listings are for, you know, the fish that still don't turn. So don't worry if they don't turn. Don't, you know, price it lower. I've listed mine up for $150 and it doesn't turn, so it's still going to sell. Yeah, you just need to find these now. They're easy to find at garage. I mean, I say easy to find at garage sales. I found it once, but they're maybe more common to find in garage sales and thrift stores now. But yeah, the ones you want to be looking out for are the ones from like the late 90s, preferably by the American manufacturer called Gemmy Industries. They've made new ones. They don't hold the same sort of value. They're maybe around $40-$50. So just be aware, you want the older one. Look for that year on the box or on the back of the fish. You want that late 90s. That's where the value is. Now, what did I sell this week? We're going to move on to what I sold. You know, we know for a fact that auctions on eBay produce a lower selling price. We know that. But they're just so fucking fun. And the auction for the Foot Rot Flats jigsaw puzzle collection that I picked up, what was it, 2 weeks ago by now, has sold. It had a bit of interest. It didn't have that late flurry of bids that, you know, gives us that dopamine and is really the only reason why I do auctions, because, you know, it's so fun to see the numbers go up, if they go up. But yeah, you'll remember that those puzzles were beaten to fuck. They were caved in. They were dirty. Not really in display condition, but they both had the plastic seal around them, and maybe the jigsaw puzzles inside of them were still, you know, had still all the pieces. Foot Rot Flats is obviously a huge collector's market, so I was able to get $51 for both of those combined. Now, it's not that much compared to the one that we sold previously, which was $150 for a fully factory sealed one. I wish all three of these were factory sealed. That would have been a $450 sale for puzzles that I picked up for. How much did I pay for these things, by the way? I think I paid like $6 each. So in total for those three jigsaw puzzles, I paid $18 and I've gotten $201 out of them, which is a pretty good return for jigsaws. They're the worst thing that the Lord has ever invented, and I've been able to profit that from them for a few times this year. Definitely not going to make it a habit of picking these up. Foot Rot Flats, if you find it in the wild, you're definitely going to want to pick that up. I think I've said definitely way too many times in the past 60 seconds, but yeah, I've found Foot Rot Flats items before. The sealed VHS sold within like an hour or so. Anything that isn't the comic books, I think, is worth picking up. The comic books, if you're able to find them in a huge bulk lot. But if you find individual ones, really the best ones are the later issues, whether or not you'll find them in a thrift store, because they seem to know about them. The other merchandise, the jigsaws, the VHS, the cups, the mugs, that shit is what you're going to get eyeballs on eBay. So find them, buy them, tag me if you find anything. Foot Rot Flats, besides the books, don't tag me if you find the books. So yeah, that was a good sale. And you know what? We're off to the fucking races, because the first Polly Pocket has sold. The first Polly Pocket has sold for $129.95, which means after all fees, after post, we have probably got back half of our money, I would say. And the one that sold was a hotel, Polyville Hotel, which was a complete, one of the five that were complete, had four figures. And yeah, I mean, once I averaged out how much I paid for all of these Polly Pockets, they come out to about $11 each, something like that. Maybe a bit less, because I didn't include the mat. So yeah, 11 into $129.95. We're well on our way to breaking even, and it's only been a couple of days. I'm really excited to see what happens. What I was going to say, and what I was hinting at earlier, was that I honestly thought these were going to be snapped up really quickly, just because the market is smaller in terms of supply in Australia than it is in America. But it's been a bit slower. And I mentioned earlier that I was talking to my mum about this. She was like messaging me pretty much, you know, for the first couple of days, have any sold. And I was like, nope. This one did. Oh, by the way, speaking of mum, I was talking to her on the phone and I was telling her, this is the very first day that I found these, and I was telling her about this Polly Pocket bundle, and she was like, I want to see. I'm like, okay, chucked on FaceTime and I'm going through them all, and I'm like, showed one, showed two, showed three. And I was like, which one do you want to see next? And then, you know, that'll be it. Do you want to see this one or this one? And she's like, I want to see them all. I'm like, oh God. She's like, they're so cute. She was like, I want to play with them. I'm like, oh man. They're nostalgic to even the older generation. Sorry, mom, but yeah, the older generation nostalgic for. Yeah, they're really cool. I wish I could find some Mighty Max or some of the ones that I played with. I think there was Action Man versions too, weren't there? There was the dude ones were Action Man, Mighty Max, and I vaguely remember like a Batman line too. Because I know I've seen the Batman compact in a thrift store without the minifigures. And I think that I've seen a Riddler version too. It must have been a licensed version. Like, it must have been a licensed Mad Max or a licensed Polly Pocket with... who owns Batman? Is it Warner Brothers? No, DC. Must have been some sort of licensing agreement. But yeah, would love to find some of them. Or like go to a garage sale and find like a huge box full of those. But... haven't had any luck with those, but yeah, 11 into 129.95. We're off to the races, and I guess it isn't so bad out there for some people being able to spend over $100 on little bits of plastic. It's just us poor people that are finding it tough. When I say us, I mean me, not you. But yeah, really, really good sale, and the next sale was also really fast. It's that Sydney Swans AFL hat that I was just talking to you about. I was able to identify 3 out of the 5 signatures using the process I told you about before. Now, going back to that 2005 AFL Grand Final, from what I understand, there was one final kick by a player named Leo Barry. And I don't know if it was after the siren or just before the siren. I know the Sydney Swans won by like 3 points. So I don't know if they were down by 3 points and then someone kicked a goal and won them the game. But I was looking through the signatures hoping that it was Leo Barry. Because if it was Leo Barry, the guy that kicked the winning goal, I would be able to say in the marketing, you know, Leo Barry just kicked the final goal and the very first thing he did was come over and sign this fucking hat. But no, he wasn't on there. And the players that did sign it, to me as like a casual AFL fan, I didn't recognize the names. There were some people on that team that their names I did recognize, for example, Adam Goods, Barry Hall, a couple of other people's, Leo Barry, I sort of know that. But yeah, no players that I really knew, but it still sold, I think, within 48 hours. So creating a story works, and putting in that bit of extra time to identify the signatures, I guess, has worked. And we've made 10 into $100 in 2 days. Now, the next item that's sold, I just want to talk about real quickly. I've talked about on the podcast that extremely embarrassing situation with the Lifeline employees where I bought a Bratz pillow and they thought it was for me, and I can barely even get the words out. I want to talk about it just because this thing was sitting on my eBay account for fucking ever. I think it was like 40 watches, 40 views, if not more. And it was only a $40 pillow. I bought it, I think, for $5, and it sold for $40. This was a while ago. A Bratz pillow that had a character on it named Jade. And it was one of those pillows where it's a rectangle and the character is like on the far left at the bottom, and her feet hang off it as if it's like 3D. This is, if you haven't heard that really embarrassing moment within Lifeline, I'll just quickly repeat it. Even though I'm just literally cringing, I found it in the thrift store, and like I said, it was only a couple of bucks, and the comps at the time showed sales of $50, and there was a really good sell-through rate, so I thought, why not? And you can see on the front of it, it has the Bratz logo, it has the character's name, which was Jade, and I'm not thinking too much about it because it's an item that I picked up when I was almost just getting started. I don't know if it was a long time ago. It had been sitting with me for a long time. So I didn't really know that thrift stores like to comment on things that you buy. So I'm going up to the counter and they see like this fucking oversized ogre looking creature come up to them, and I got this pillow in my hand, and one of them says, there's two at the cash register because it takes two people at thrift stores to help you check out, but she said this is cute, and the other one was like, what is it? Oh, and I was like, it's a brat's pillow, it's jade. I'm literally rubbing my forehead thinking about this, and the other one looked at the other one, at the other person, and she went, oh, he knows her name. And I just, I was thinking like the irony of Lifeline making me want to fucking kill myself. That I'm just glad that that's out, because every time I looked at that pillow, I just thought about that time. It just made my skin crawl. It's the most embarrassing purchase that I've ever done. And it's just a pillow. It shouldn't have been such a big deal, but that memory lives in my head rent free. Oh, anyway. Yeah, that's seriously. Anyway, move on to secondhand opinions where there isn't as much cringe. I asked you last week, if you or somebody you know has ever camped out at a retail store for an in-demand item to resell on eBay. This is because here in Sydney, there's been massive lineups to buy the Labubus. Whether or not people are buying them to resell or to collect, no idea. But I thought, surely some resellers have done this before. Maybe it's like an innovative way to make money. So I've chucked the poll up, and I'm not kidding, 100% of people said no. No thanks, not for me. 100%, not a single person wrote, yes, I've camped out, which is a surprise because there's always been at least one person that has gone against the grain, but now not a single person. So now I'm thinking, and you might be thinking too, maybe it's an opportunity. Maybe you should go out there and camp outside of a store. If anyone wants to go on a camping trip, maybe we should line up for the latest Labubu. In the lineup, we can Google and find out exactly what they fucking are. Yeah, nobody has ever camped out for an item to resell. I reckon there might be a tiny bit of money in it. I think of like the PlayStation 5 when it first came out. You could not find those anywhere for a very, very long time. I think it was during COVID that they came out. Something to do with like the microprocessors. The production wasn't fast enough to keep up with the demand. I think they were selling for close to $1,000 on eBay, and they retail for like $600. I think there would be money to be made with that camping out. Maybe not with Labubus. What about the Nintendo Switch? The number 2 just came out. Maybe supply has caught up with demand for consoles. If there's another pandemic, maybe we should camp out for a video game console if one comes out. Put it in your calendar for the next pandemic, whenever that's going to be. We'll be the ones camping out for the PlayStation 10. And everyone else will be camping out for toilet paper. But this week's topic, we're going to be talking about, I don't know, something that is a bit outlandish and might not be true, but let's still go into it. The topic is, would thrift stores go out of business without resellers? Now, chances are, if you're listening, you're a reseller. The scum of the earth, apparently, according to a lot of the internet. But I'm going to approach this with neutrality. I want you to as well. And just think, like, there's a constant battle between resellers and thrift stores. You know, they want to get the highest possible price, and we want to buy low, flip for a profit. That's the name of the game. And, you know, in the US, you've seen places like Goodwill, the staff on video, even in interviews where they know they're being recorded, they openly admit on camera that they're trying to cut out resellers entirely. So, is that a smart move for like a business where their model is built around donations? I think, you know, most thrift stores get their stock for free, and their goal is, or should be, to process those donations and move them quickly, just, you know, like you or me. So prices are usually low, and places like Savers here in Australia, they're operating they have huge, huge expensive spaces. You know, the rent on that must be insane. So they need that volume to justify the rent. Like, if they price out the resellers, who is left? The casual shopper, right? That's who's left. How often does a casual shopper really visit a thrift store? Like, what's their demographic? The data isn't available, but we can assume that most people with a disposable income, they're working 9-to-5 jobs, and they can't hit an op shop like us at like 11 a.m. on a Wednesday. So who is shopping during the day? They're people like stay-at-home parents, they're seniors, they're unemployed, retired, and resellers. So there's five groups there. Who is spending the most money? I honestly think the people that are spending the most money, my guess is the resellers, because stay-at-home parents, they're, you know, hunting for cheap kids' clothes. These are all generalizations, by the way. Don't come at me. The seniors, they're there for the conversation. The unemployed might be looking for support or not to spend any money. And the retired picking up bed sheets for their ninth investment property. And the resellers, we're buying big hauls, often daily. So I'm not saying like resellers, they're heroes. We're not the heroes of thrifting. But I would wager that we make up a huge, huge chunk of their sales volume, right? So I don't know. The funniest part of all this is like the resellers that ruined thrifting crowd. You know, you see that everywhere. They have no data to like back up these claims. So doing like a deep dive into a category like this, it just really reaffirms how full of crap they are. Like there's zero like publicly available data on the percentage of thrift shoppers who resell. And I've checked, you know, I wanted to find this data, but these people are just guessing and they're not guessing very well. But anyway, let's be honest. No thrift store is asking if you're a reseller at the checkout. They're seeing an item that they've priced get sold. That's it. So if the same item is priced double the next time it hits the shelf, it's not really the reseller's fault. But anyway, I'm rambling. Let me know what you think. Would thrift stores go out of business without resellers? You can vote on the Flip Weekly newsletter. Either yes, they'd go out of business. No, they'd continue to do well. I'd love to know your thoughts. Vote there. You can email in matt@flipweekly.com, Matt with one T. Go on the website, submit a form, even get in touch via social media with your own thoughts. And by the way, if you submit a form on the website, make sure you type out your email address properly, because I've had people email me using the wrong email address, or they've had a typo in their email address. So when I've gone to reply, it immediately bounces back. So learn to write out your own fucking email address. But yeah, let me know what you think. Would thrift stores go out of business without resellers? Now, I've got something a bit different to end this with. I'm going to tell you about a very quick story. It's about a collection from somebody that contacted me on social media after reading the Yahoo News article. I've written about this on the Flip Weekly newsletter. I'm going to talk to you about it now. It's basically why I'm hunting for pottery at every thrift store. Now, I've been ignoring this sort of section in the past. You know, anything that's like a coffee mug, anything that's like a jug or a barrel, I've really not paid it too much attention, especially if it looks like handmade pottery. You know, I've ignored it thinking it's worth nothing. I subconsciously associated the category with low value items. You know, that's my fault, thinking it's not worth my time. But thanks to like an out of the blue message on social media over the past few days, I've learned that I couldn't be more wrong. So a collector from Queensland has sent me through a message. His name was Dean, and he asked if I could help him out. And what followed really opened my eyes to something that I'm going to be hunting for now. So Dean sent me a message on social media that said, "I was wondering if you could help me out. I collect Bundaberg rum vintage pottery and seeing if you can keep an eye out on your travels. I'd buy anything you find." Now, I've sold a few Bundaberg rum items in the past. I've talked to you about the category before. It's always out the door really quickly, but I had never heard of the pottery. Honestly, I'd never heard of it. So curiosity got the better of me, and I asked Dean for a bit more information, which is what us resellers should be doing if you find an item, you hear about a category that is a bit obscure and there's people that collect it. You need to be curious and you need to be asking questions. So yeah, I asked Dean, is this stuff valuable? What does it look like? Are there other people who collect this stuff? And honestly, with the statement that he said, I'd buy anything you find, it was like echoing in my brain. So I thought this is something that we should learn more about. So I had the conversation with Dean and I looked online, and the Bundaberg rum pottery pieces that you'll find out in thrift stores, they're primarily created by one or two companies in the mid to late 90s. Now, the two companies are called Port Curtis Pottery and Burrell Creek Pottery. Both of them shut up shop like 20 years ago, but the pieces that they created, they're highly, highly sought after by collectors. And I asked Dean if he was going to share some photos with me of his collection. He sent them through, and the collection looks incredible. There's photos on the Flip Weekly newsletter, but Dean has an incredible collection of Bundaberg rum and Bundaberg rum pottery. Man, he told me that at one point in time, he had $50,000 worth of Bundaberg rum. And I believe him looking at the photos. I think the collection looks amazing. There's obviously a lot of love for the brand. And the pieces are becoming harder and harder to find, you know, because they're pottery. They're prone to breaking and things like that. So what can you expect to sell the stuff for? You know, the items that Dean has, they're mugs, their barrels, their like 1 liter, I mean, what do you call them? 1 liter jugs. They're like, you know, they're dark. They have the hand engraved Bundaberg rum logo. And if you see them on the Flip Weekly newsletter, you'll be able to see that they have, you know, the Bundaberg rum logo, product of Australia, that sort of stuff. That would be discernible at a thrift store. So what can they sell for? That's what I'm most interested in. Dean tells me that the mugs, just a simple mug, can sell for up to $100, and the larger barrels can sell up for close to $500. So I looked it up on eBay sold comps, and what do you know? Rare Port Curtis Pottery Bundaberg Rum Mug, $75 plus 15 shipping, so $90 total, or basically $100 just for the mug. And the other one, Bundaberg Rum Pottery Very Rare Jug, $600 on bid. These things are crazy. I'm not kidding. Every time I've been to the thrift for the past week, I've been looking at, you know, the pottery stuff that looks just like this. And I've just been thinking, you know, what are the odds I find some Bundaberg rum just as Dean has written into me? But of course, I haven't been that lucky. But looking at this shit, it looks like something I'd be able to find, because I went to a thrift store, took a photo of the section that they would be in, and there's just so many different items that look like that. So if you are going to the thrift and you usually skip over that sort of mug section, keep an eye out for Bundaberg rum pottery, because if you find a barrel, if you find a jug, you could sell it for like $500 to $1,000 to Dean, right? To a guy, we have a buyer ready to go. Or you could chuck it on eBay and see how it goes. But man, this shit is like a category that I want to be finding. And, you know, Dean goes on to say that the op shops and the markets, you can find them sometimes, like him, for $5. And that's what we want to hear. We want to hear that it's like a been there, done that type situation. So you should be excited right now to go out and find some of this pottery stuff. We want to line our pockets. We want to sell Bundy rum to Dean. And yeah, I recommend jumping onto Flip Weekly and checking out his collection. There's a lot of booze, but there's a lot of pottery. All right, that's all I've got for you this week. Make sure you check out Flip Weekly on social media. I'm going to have some videos up from the Facebook Marketplace find. Also, if you want to see photos from this podcast, check out the Flip Weekly newsletter at flipweekly.com. It's a free newsletter. Doesn't have to cost you anything. And of course, if you haven't already seen the 90s nostalgia interactive table that I put together last week, go on to flipweekly.com. Check them all out. There's a ton of other resources there too, besides the newsletter. We have calculators, we have spreadsheets. I know a lot of resellers online are charging for spreadsheets. Created one for free. It's all up there. It uses Google Sheets. You're free to use that. It has, you know, built-in graphs, calculators, profit and loss. Yeah, take advantage of that. And of course, if you find anything at the thrift store or at garage sales this week worth over $100, I'd love to check it out. Good luck at garage sales if you go to them. Avoid the ones where people have animal skin covering their rocking horses. And of course, remind me to talk about Marketplace, how I'm able to get some bargains. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you again next week.
Flip, 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 flip,